And this is Idaho Matters Live. I'm Gemma Gaudette. You know, as the Gem State prepares to start its four-part reopening process, there are a lot of unknowns top of mind for so many of us. So beginning tomorrow, phase one officially starts. Now, with that comes the opportunity for places of worship to reopen following social distancing and health guidelines. But restaurants, bars, gyms, salons, and other places where people gather will remain closed until later phases. That's made some of our listeners wonder, why can churches reopen when other organizations can't? And what will services look like following the new rules? Joining us to share some of his reporting on this topic is Boise State Public Radio news reporter, Troy Oppie. Hey there, Troy.
Hi, Gemma. Glad to be here.
So this is a bit confusing, I have to say, especially when we look at that phase one that starts tomorrow, where it says still no public or private gatherings. So with right. that, what can you tell us about why the governor decided to include churches in this first phase?
Well, I don't know that it's crystal clear. Local faith communities obviously want to be back together and worship, and the governor is sensitive to that. Governor Little was on a Zoom call with about 140 faith leaders from mostly from the Treasure Valley. And that was the day before he announced the four-phase plan to reopen, going back a couple weeks ago. I spoke to several pastors who were on that call. They all said he didn't commit to reopening anything at that time. He did it the next day. But they all shared concerns with him about the situation, how they were feeling. And the governor told pastors that he values their importance as community leaders and a steadying presence for people in their communities, suggesting that there's a mental health aspect to the ability for church communities to come together and worship.
And you've been talking since these closures started in March with business owners and as well as employees in the service sector. And frankly, there's a lot of people upset about this reopening strategy right. rather. I mean, people who really feel left out, right? Especially when it comes to allowing places of worship to reopen in the first phase.
Yeah, and certainly there are many different pain points between different organizations and types of businesses. I talked to Aubrey Schofield last week. She runs the Nook Bar in downtown Boise. It's a very small bar. She only has five staff plus herself, and they're pushed out to phase four, even though with their size, it might be easier for the public to safely patronize the Nook, and she understands that. Here's what she told me.
I definitely think this should be looked at as like a per capacity basis, right? Like what business can reopen based on capacity? So I don't understand how you can go to a church and separate people, you know, 6 feet from each other in pews, but you can't be in a bar having a mimosa on a Sunday and making sure you're also socially distancing.
Yeah, the size thing is what's going to make a big difference here for churches. Small congregations in large spaces probably aren't going to have as difficult a time staying properly spaced. It's the larger congregations and church communities of any size who just don't have any room to stretch out in their building that are having to figure out ticketing and reservations to get the people that want to be there in safely.
But as the owner of the Nook Bar said, I mean, when you look at that capacity, you can understand why people get a bit upset. I mean, like my salon, for example, it's one person at a time, but they're in that second phase and that's just the way it is. So I'm curious, Troy, what churches are actually planning then to hold worship service this Sunday? Because it's not, you don't have to open. And then what are their plans to really keep folks safe?
It's a lot of non-denominational churches that I've seen. I talked to Life Church in Meridian, which is on Eagle Road. I know Eagle Christian is planning to open for worship on Sunday. Oregon Trail Church of God in Middleton is as well. Grace Lutheran Church in Caldwell, it's a Missouri Synod congregation. I spoke with several of those pastors. They're planning reservations to limit the number of people that can come into the sanctuaries. They're going to seat people by their family group 6 feet apart. Lots of hand sanitizing, of course. Family groups will be ushered to and from their seats to minimize foot traffic at entrances and exits. Doors are going to be propped open so nobody's touching those things. Face masks are going to be encouraged, and that's what they're planning to do.
So then what about more traditional Christian churches, Troy? I mean, they typically have a communion ritual, right? And you, a lot of times, I mean, it's put in your hand or it's put in your mouth, but also there are times where you may shake hands or hug. I mean, are there going to be guidelines around that?
Right. The passing of the peace is not a good thing to be doing right now. And pastors understand that. And, you know, those types of things are not going to be able to be part of worship services, at least the handshaking and that type of thing. There are still churches that are planning to do communion and not necessarily common cup, anything like that. But, you know, they'll have a table in the front. They'll bring up family groups all together. The pastors will be wearing gloves and sanitizing in between groups, and everything kind of will be kind of set out there and ready to go. It's a risk to some faith communities. It has been deemed an acceptable risk, and they're finding ways to do it because of its importance in their liturgy.
Have you found any commonality between the kinds of Christian churches that are going to hold services this weekend? I'm just curious about that.
Anecdotally, it does appear that more of the independent non-denominational churches are the ones primarily choosing to resume in-person worship starting this Sunday. And that could be because these types of churches may not have a regional or national church body that helps dictate church policy. Two exceptions to that I've seen are Grace Lutheran in Caldwell, which is part of the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church, and St. Mark's Catholic Church in Boise. They have announced their ticketing and holding worship, holding mass, several different masses on Sundays. But not all of the Missouri Synod Lutheran churches, for example, are choosing to do that. So there's not a lot of consistency. And I think that speaks to a lot of the frustration that we heard from people like Aubrey Schofield a minute ago, who owns that bar. It's a little bit of the Wild West where congregations are free to make their own decisions. And even though I know many of these pastors do want to get their congregations back in the pews, there's also considerable stress for many of them to make sure they're making good decisions within this process and can do this safely.
Because look, you don't want to be the church that gets an outbreak.
No, you don't. You don't. And I mean, I talked with Episcopal Bishop Brian Thom this week, and they've already experienced some of that with their parish in Sun Valley. Early on in this outbreak, a choir practice became a disease vector for that area. And he didn't go into a lot of detail, but I could sense that's painful. That's a painful feeling to have that.
Well, and speaking of Bishop Brian Thom, there are churches that aren't going to reopen, even with the order from the governor allowing that. And what did some of these pastors and even rabbis talk about?
And the Episcopal Church has said, at least in Idaho, they are going to wait until at least May 24th to open. They want to be cautious. Bishop Thom told me all his clergy among the 26 parishes in the Idaho diocese were on board with that. He specifically said church practices are not conducive at all to social distancing.
Right.
And obviously is sensitive to what happened in Sun Valley as that parish became a bit of a vector. I also spoke with Rabbi Dan Fink from Congregation of Beth Israel in Boise. They're not planning on hosting in-person synagogue anytime soon. He says the health and safety of his parishioners is paramount, and there's actually a pillar of the Jewish faith that addresses that specifically, and I want him to tell you about it.
It is a fundamental principle. The Hebrew word is pikuach nefesh, which means the saving of a soul or a life. Judaism is built around these commandments as a path through life, and they guide our actions and they shape our days, but all of them are set aside for the purpose of preserving life and health, with the three exceptions of you're not allowed to commit idolatry, adultery, or murder to save your own life. But none of this is in that time frame or in that at that moral level. Everything that we do takes a back seat to preserving life and health.
And I will say, Rabbi Fink really pushed back on the phrasing of reopening churches. He said, churches haven't been closed. And indeed, that's the case. Everything that I know, worship has still been going on. It's different, but it's still been going on.
Troy, that's such an incredibly good point. I mean, because so many churches have been doing online streaming services. I mean, to be perfectly transparent, I get little alerts on my phone when, you know, when our church is having a live service, right? So
right.
That's happening. So what did faith leaders you spoke with say about, you know, using that as a replacement instead of physically going into church?
Well, and certainly in a transparency note here too, I'm responsible at my own church for part of our digital worship services as well, and I can see the numbers, who's participating, how many people are participating, and it's different from week to week. Every church that's out there producing some type of digital online content is learning as they go, and they're trying to craft that message for the audience better and better each week. Those aren't going to stop, because even with the doors open again for services, churches are still saying, look, if you feel sick, if you're in a high-risk group, stay home. We're going to stream this. There's still going to be digital content available for you. You can still continue to worship in that way. But for anybody who wants to, who isn't high risk, who feels good, is not sick, you know, you can come with proper social distancing.
What's so fascinating in this whole thing, Troy, is that the reason to reopen houses of worship is for the community environment, right? It is to be
right.
in communion with other people. However, community is also the reason to stay away.
Right. Right. And that fact was not lost across many of the pastors that I spoke with, and bishops I spoke with for this story. The sense of being together and worshiping is the biggest part of church, and that's also what makes it dangerous. The pastor who organized that Zoom call I mentioned earlier is Pastor Robert Fraser, who runs Redemption Hill Church in Boise. And I asked him specifically about that, you know, what makes it worth the risk, essentially, to do this. And here's what he said.
I think that most people see their faith as an indispensable part of who they are, and they're going to take whatever option they can to continue. We believe that church is not the gathering or the meeting, but it's the people who are there. And so I think our people will continue to push through obstacles because it's important to them. And at the same time, we really want to care for our community. Most of the Old Testament, good portion of it, is basically public health rules. And so living in a society and caring for people who are sick is really important to people who follow in the way of Jesus.
It's a double-edged sword, to put it
yeah.
nicely, I think.
So Troy, did any faith leaders talk about the financial aspect of this? Because we know that many churches, right. they rely on donations from their congregation in order to be sustainable.
Right. And Bishop Thon, the Episcopal bishop, mentioned that specifically. And he said, actually, donations are up during this time. And I think, you know, not to make a nice pivot to our own fundraising today.
Right.
We've seen that too here during our one-day membership drive. Bishop Thom did mention something interesting, though. The demographic breakdown between people who give and the ways that they give. Baby boomers and you know, some of the older generation, very much in-person givers, whereas people under the age of about 50, they've shifted their giving online. It comes out automatically. They don't have to think about it. And it's a very opposite way of giving between, you know, that kind of falls down those generational lines.
So the reopening, I mean, it's ultimately predicated on the idea that people are going to be smart, and that we won't see a spike in COVID-19 cases or deaths. But how are these church leaders thinking about the possibility that this reopening, I mean, is conditional? I mean, the governor in his news conference at 11 a.m. today said, you know, if they have to, they'll roll these phases back.
Right. And I think, I mean, the faith leaders that I spoke with all understand that. And they do, even if they are working towards reopening, they do want to be aware of what's going on in their congregation. You know, if things are getting worse, scale things back again, increase restrictions, maybe, you know, change the way they're doing services. it's so difficult because if you think about different disease vectors, tiny little vectors was a phrase I heard from a reporter in Governor Little's news conference. What do you do about mm-hmm. kids at church? How do you keep them socially distant? And right. managing all those things is really hard. Pastor Frazier said, you know, specifically at Redemption Hill, they were happy to wait a little longer if necessary.
Hey, Troy, we've both had little tiny kids, and it's hard It's hard to get them to not eat dirt, so let alone social distance, right?
It's hard to get them not to bust down my door right now, but yeah, those challenges are real.
The struggle is real. Troy, thank you so much. Such good clarity in why that decision was made. We've been talking with Boise State Public Radio reporter Troy Abbey. This is Idaho Matters.